You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
So I'm Russ Whitehurst. I'm director of the Brown Center here at Brookings. Just this month, the Illinois Senate unanimously passed a bill that would require new teachers to earn excellent qualifications before they get tenure. Last month, the Florida governor signed a teacher quality bill that establishes merit pay for educators based on student achievement. The Arizona legislature recently passed a law that incorporates student progress data into evaluation systems for individual principals and teachers. Colorado passed a law requiring that 50% of teachers' evaluation be determined by the academic growth of their students. Louisiana requires student growth to count for 50% of teacher evaluations. We recently had an event with Governor Christie of New Jersey in which he announced his plan to require teacher evaluations to be based on student achievement. In New Jersey, he went on, and I'll come back to this, proposed that every school district should design and implement its own evaluation plan. When we turn to the federal government, we've got the Teacher Incentive Fund present since No Child Left Behind. That's roughly $500 million a year available to districts to compete for, and it requires that districts have to reward teachers and principals based on student achievement using fair and transparent evaluations. Race to the Top, the Obama administration initiative, required that states not have any laws in place that prevented the linking of student evaluation data to teachers. And basically, you couldn't get an award unless you promised to put an evaluation system in place that was strongly based on student achievement. So you look over all of these approaches, including a lot that I didn't list just to save time, and you find that they have two things in common. One is that they require the evaluation of teachers based on the gains that their students make. And the second is that the details of how this is to be done are completely unspecified. So if we're going to leave to individual school districts in this country, of which there are about 16,000, the responsibility for designing teacher evaluation systems, we're going to have 16,000 evaluation systems. Some of them are going to be harmful. Many of them will be useless. Some of them will be okay. Some of them will be pretty good. Some of them will be great. But which is going to be which, and on what basis, I don't think we're in presently a position to know. The variation in the quality of these systems has real consequences. Teachers do not get hired in one school district and teach there for the rest of their lives. They move around. The specification of a teacher as ineffective or highly effective in one district is going to have consequences for what they're hired to do in other districts, as well as the performance in their own districts. So the idea that we're going to have all these rubber rulers out there for evaluating teachers seems to this group problematic. And it becomes problematic when it's tied to efforts at the state and federal level to help districts reward their most effective teachers. So if a teacher in New Jersey has access to a significant salary increment for being highly effective, what if the teacher who's highly effective in Newark, in fact, is not very highly effective at all when you look at the quality of the evaluation system that's been put into place? So what we've tried to do in our report is address how teacher evaluation systems that are going to differ in many operational details can be placed on the same scale in terms of their reliability. And we deal with a very vexing issue that is barely acknowledged, if acknowledged at all, in the state and federal policies I've previously mentioned, and that is that most teachers teach in untested grades and subjects, in which student growth cannot be measured because there are no measures of student learning. what we're going to try to do today is talk about how you'd go about addressing the issue of the comparability of teacher evaluation systems, the problem of teachers teaching in untested grades and subjects, and the ability to have a common ruler that makes sense and could be used statewide in most states. The people who have joined me in this task are the folks in the panel. We've got Steve Glazerman, who's a senior fellow at Mathematica Policy Research, Dan Goldhaber, who's director of the Center for Education Data and Research at the University of Washington, Susanna Loeb, who's professor of education and director of the Institute for Research on Education Policy and Practice at Stanford, Steve Rowdenbush, who's the Lewis Sebring Distinguished Service Professor and Chair of the Committee on Education at the University of Chicago, and Doug Steiger, who's the John French Professor of Economics at Dartmouth. It falls to them to try to explain what is a very technical, wonky report in ways that will leave you completely satisfied.
Scintillating.
We've issued, previous reports. This is the third in our series, and we see that the work that we are presenting today fits in the context of those previous reports. So we're going to be covering previous material, the material that's released today, and also trying to put this in the broader context of improving schools in general. I'd like to turn to Steve Glazerman to provide a brief review of the material in our previous report. It focused on value added and what's good about it, and that's an important context for the rest of our work. So, Steve?
Thanks, Russ. So, the report that we are discussing today is the third in a trilogy. One of those earlier reports we released last November was about the importance of value-added measures in the overall goal of measuring teacher performance. And I guess I should probably start by just saying when we talk about value-added, we mean teachers' contribution to student achievement growth over some specific time period. So when we talk about value-added measures, that is our attempt to measure that concept, then we're talking about using student test score data and data on the characteristics of the students that each teacher has and their prior achievement to control for as many of the factors as we can that are outside the control of the teacher. And so the paper that we released in November was really trying to address some of the concerns that have been raised about value-added measures and sort of put them into context of a policy decision-making process. And the basic conclusion is, or argument that we tried to make, is that value-added measures are not perfect, and there many of the reliability concerns that many people have raised once value-added as an idea has gotten a lot of attention, thank you to the Los Angeles Times and the New York Times, we're not disputing any of the issues about reliability, but I think what we need to work through is how to incorporate the information on the reliability of a teacher performance measure like value-added into the decision-making process so that the policies and the stakes attached to those policies are aligned well with the quality of the measures themselves. And we made a number of specific, really four specific arguments to guide policymakers through this issue. The first one was really about value-added measurement versus accountability. Okay, so oftentimes there's a lot of debate and controversy around value-added, where much of that controversy is really around the particular policies that they're used to inform. And so we want to just point out the distinction that value-added measurement itself is different from what you then go do with it. It's important to very carefully align these policies with the quality of the measures themselves and not overreach, but at the same time understand that that the measurement itself has any variety of uses, which could include summative uses, human resource personnel decisions, as well as basic issues like more formative policies
such as professional development, targeted professional development, or teaching assignments, helping teachers understand their own strengths and weaknesses. The second point that we made in this paper was about the consequences of misclassifying teachers. Even in the absence of value added, classification decisions are being made all the time. So in a sort of a default teacher evaluation system, or a very common teacher evaluation system, it may be the case that 90% of teachers are given the top rating in the system, or 95%, or 98%. In that case, if the teacher evaluation has no bearing on, let's say, a tenure decision, tenure is automatic,